Welcome on into the second half of Sports Talk this Thursday, January 9th. We got a lot going on today. Going to have Scott Shanley coming up after the first break, Super Bowl champ, Saints pregame and postgame analyst, talking the state of the Saints and also some NFL playoff action. At 7 o'clock hour, Mark Etheridge, D1Baseball.com, SEC writer. Getting ready for action on the diamond soon. Next month, the LSU baseball team opens the season, and we'll be looking at them and all the rest of the SEC heading into this year. Leading off, rough run for the Pelicans last night, an ugly game against the Portland Trail Blazers, and insult to injury, I guess you could say. You got Herb Jones left the game with a shoulder issue. Hopefully, it's nothing too serious with him.
We still haven't gotten an update on that, have we, Steve?
Have not heard anything from Coach Willie Green or the team.
I know that Willie said that last night that they didn't have any information on it just yet, but it felt like it was the same shoulder that he had injured against Golden State.
Right.
Which, if that's the case, almost kind of similarly with what happened with Trey Murphy when he injured that ankle. It was the same ankle that he had tweaked like a couple weeks prior. It's injuries that keep popping up. It's the same injuries that keep happening. So, yeah, looking back at last night's game, Steve, I did reports for this morning on it, and it's just not pretty. I mean, there's no other way to say it. You welcomed in a Portland team that was 12-23 at that point. They were 12th place in the Western Conference, and they just could not miss.
You were down by 33 at one point.
In the first half.
Yeah.
Like, that's when you went into halftime, you were down 75-42. And I read the numbers off when we were interviewing Nick Friedell, and he's just like, I got a headache for you guys. And I'm like, yeah, no, we get it. Because one of our texters on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talking Text Line had sent in is just like, isn't defense supposed to be Willie Green's calling card? And it has been. And this time here, you know, the Pelicans have played some really good defense, but last night was not that. And, you know, Portland, they get off to 16-22 in the first quarter. And it was even better. I think it was like 15-20 as well at one point.
They couldn't miss and we couldn't hit.
By the end of the first half, they were 31-46. From the floor. The Portland Trail Blazers. I mean, this isn't a very good team. And this is a team that's beaten you now three times this year.
Yeah.
And yes, the injury issues were definitely, you know, the main reason why you lost the first couple games. The one game you beat them in, Zion played, B.I. played. We remember, you know, Ingram hitting that big shot at the end and Zion getting the game-winning block, right? That was the one game that you beat Portland this year. And that's not a good Portland team. I think basically a third of their wins have come against the Pelicans, if you want to look at it that way.
Can we just line up the Wizards for the Pels to play the rest of the season?
Yeah, I wish. It's unfortunate, though, because you get that two-game winning streak, and you know Zion comes back for the Timberwolves game. You're feeling pretty good about that matchup because Minnesota was not necessarily world beaters at that point. But you get off to a bad start in that game. You kind of come back, but you fall short late. And then the matchup against Portland, it was, from Willie Green's own words, uncompetitive from the get-go. And it just was not up to the Pelican standards. So the people that were out at the Smoothie King Center last night and saw it, you know, it's, people are frustrated, and I get it. I mean, this, it was a bad showing for the Pels. They got blown out by a Portland team that's going to be picking in the lottery. And so now at this point, you're 7-31, and you have to start having realistic conversations about where you are. I mean, we talked with Chris Dodson about this last week, and he said that there are people there that still think they can make the push for the 10 seed. I just don't see it, Steve. I don't see it.
I don't see that being realistic either.
And I don't want to be a negative Nelly, but I mean, at this point, the Western Conference is still legit. Like, it is still as good as advertised. And you're probably going to have to reach 40 wins to sniff the 10 seed. I mean, maybe around 38 to potentially get close, but
right, you need to go more than 500 the rest of the way.
You need to get white hot. You need to play some of the best basketball in the entire NBA. Leading up to the final week of the season. And I don't see it from this team at this point. And, you know, they're churning in the wrong direction, Steve, to put it lightly.
Yeah, the return of Zion was a highlight even in the loss the other night. He was not playing in the back-to-back at home. And we'll see, like, going forward, if the team ends up, you know, as he progresses in his conditioning, if they decide to, you know, be okay with him suiting up in back-to-back nights. The guy's still just 24 years old to me. I think it's ridiculous to think that you need to have load management on him, even despite the injury history. I understand coming back right away from this hamstring issue, you want to be careful with him,
though. They called it like the return to play conditioning, something. Like, they did not want to use load management, which is the term that we used last night. But they didn't want to call it that, but that's
whatever
what it
you
is.
Want to call it.
That's exactly what it is. And so Zion didn't play last night. He's expected to suit up for Friday against Philadelphia, a team that, as Nick Friedell said, is the most disappointing team in the entire NBA, and that includes the Pelicans this year. Philadelphia, 15-20. We'll do more preview of them tomorrow because they play tomorrow. But the 76ers, it's another winnable game for this Pelicans team. But last night's game was a winnable game for the Pelicans, and they just didn't show up. So, you know, what can you really expect?
Yeah, you look at, you mentioned the Philadelphia 76ers tomorrow on the road. It's a three-game road trip for the Pels right now. After Philly, they'll be in Boston on Sunday and then Tuesday in Chicago. So two games that are against, you know, so-so teams, and obviously the Boston Celtics are a juggernaut right now.
Yeah.
I feel like winning for them is boring. Jeff Nowak's a fan. He's like, it's not even interesting watching the Celtics right now. They just keep winning.
I just roll my eyes at that. Whatever, dude. The 76ers are expected to be without Andre Drummond, Kyle Lowry. Paul George is listed as a game-time decision for the game. Joel Embiid is also expected to be out. He's missed a ton of time this year, early on this season as well. So not only are you playing a 76ers team that's been disappointing, but they're also potentially very shorthanded as well. So we'll see how the Pelicans kind of bounce back because, you know,
well,
the best...
we're shorthanded too, though.
Yeah, I know. But Zion should be playing, which would be a nice get. The best word I would call that Portland game was sobering. That's all I can say. I mean, they got the doors blown off them in the first half.
No, it wasn't even competitive. We were texting back and forth, and it's like, I couldn't even watch the second half, you know, tuned out into something else. Watching another game that was more competitive and actual looking like NBA basketball.
I watched a ton of Pelicans games this year, and that might have been
one of the worst.
Yeah, one of the worst games. So, you know, where do you go from here? You have to flush it, right? I mean, that's all you can really do.
We've been flushing a lot.
But that one specifically, Steve, you got to get rid of that. I mean, just, I don't want to say burn the tapes, but because they probably should look at what they did wrong, but that is a game that I will not forget, and very soon, I would say. So, yeah, this Philadelphia game, hopefully the Pelicans can come out with a better performance than they showed in the Smoothie King Center in front of their faithful fans last night against a bad Portland team, because that just wasn't it.
Speaking of hoops, looking at LSU women's basketball, 17-0 Tigers in Tennessee this evening. Sixth-ranked LSU currently has a 46-39 lead over the Vols, who are ranked number 16. That's 46-39 at the half. LSU Tigers up. Kim Mulkey's got these Lady Tigers rolling this season. Hopefully they can keep it up. We'll definitely be keeping updates on that game.
Anissa Morrow off to a fantastic start in this game as well, Steve. 19 points, 10 rebounds in the first half. Double-double.
Woohoo!
Yeah, so with LSU, the number 6 team in the country, 17-0 this season against number 16 Tennessee. Someone had called earlier and asked about LSU hoops in both men's and women's, and the SEC is just ridiculous, and specifically in men's hoops, but it's right. Also really good in women's hoops. You know, LSU men's basketball got off to a really strong non-conference start, but then, you know, they lose their first two conference games, and it kind of takes a little bit of the shine off it. But at the same time, you got to put it into perspective because the SEC is that big of a gauntlet. But Matt McMahon's squad's got to start picking up some wins here soon because Kim Mulkey is doing her thing as usual.
Yeah, interested to see this Tiger team, the Lady Tigers, and what they can do. The other day, Cream of the ESPN bracketologist called them an enigma, and I thought Kim Mulkey was funny. She's like, you can call us whatever you want. We were kind of an enigma the championship year, too.
You can call us whatever you want, but call us undefeated, because that's what LSU women's basketball is right now.
Looking at the LSU men's basketball squad, it's definitely been a tough go in the SEC. Like you mentioned, the conference play, though, has been really rough. Hopefully Matt McMahon can get that squad going coming up. I know they got a game on Saturday, I believe, is the next time they play.
Mm-hmm. That's typically the rotation with men's hoops, especially in the SEC, is like Tuesday or Wednesday and then Saturday. I mean, if you ever want to know when LSU basketball is playing, that's typically, you know, the calling card.
We're going to take a little transition from hoops and get into some Saints football talk coming up after the break. Scott Shanley, Super Bowl champ, also does pregame and postgame host for the team. We'll get a little idea from him who he likes to be the next head coach of this black and gold bunch, and also a little NFL playoff talk with him, who he likes in the first round. Taking a break here on WWL. Want to hear from you, 504-260-1870. Me and Charlie Long here till 8 o'clock this evening, trying to stay warm. You can join us too. So chime in here at WWL. Be right back after the break. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Steve Geller, Charlie Long hanging out here. Happy to welcome in now Scott Shanley, Super Bowl champion, Saints pregame and postgame analyst. Scott, how have you been? I know it was a rough season, but we got some playoff football coming up to enjoy. And right now we are in the hunt for a new head coach. Just wondering what you've been seeing, you know, so far from this black and gold bunch. They've had interviews with Anthony Weaver, the Dolphins DC, also offensive coordinator of the New York Giants, Mike Kafka, and coming up, Lions defensive coordinator Aaron Glenn. Lots of hot takes about this black and gold bunch right now going into all this, but just curious what you think so far of the names that have been connected with the black and gold.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting bunch. I mean, it covers the gamut of defensive specialists, offensive specialists, guys who have been head coaches before. So I think they're doing their due diligence. I mean, the only people that really know inside that building, I think the biggest question is, do we want somebody we're familiar with, or do we want a clean slate? I know probably a lot of the fans want a whole new clean slate. You know, Aaron Glenn, Joe Brady, guys who have been in the organization before, I think are excellent coaches. I think will be really good head coaches. But I think, you know, the way last season went, I think it makes more people feel like they need to have a whole new clean slate, which sometimes can be tricky. I think there's an advantage to knowing what you're getting in a guy. I mean, you know, Aaron Glenn was there for a number of years. He's probably the favorite because they saw him work every single day. They saw him after losses. They saw him work with players. And so when you wipe the slate clean, you don't necessarily know what you're getting until those moments happen.
You came into this organization 2006, obviously a big, huge change at the start of the Sean Payton era. Just you guys had a ton of success, though, in year one, 10-6, making the NFC Championship game. And just curious, what was the whole mentality, the feeling going in after this team had just suffered in 2005 a 3-13 season? I know you weren't part of that, but just that 2006 season, that feeling of a new head coach being in the building and just trying to build something special.
Yeah, I think for first and foremost, you notice the number of new guys. It was the roster, I believe, was 46 new players out of 53. I mean, the entire roster was really turned over. We had mainstays still there, cornerstones of the franchise, Will Smith, Deuce McAllister, Charles Grant, guys like that, Ernie Conwell. So there were guys who were part of the organization, really good football players that welcomed new guys in. And so that was helpful, but you knew it was a whole new regime. You knew Sean Payton was going to do it his way, which he did, going to Jackson, Mississippi, grinding through those tough training camps. Practices during the week were brutal. So I think the one thing that the league has kind of gone back to as far as interviewing new coaches is they want the guys in the Sean Payton molds, a little bit of old school, bringing some toughness to the building, some accountability. Sean doesn't apologize for anything. He goes to Denver and he automatically says in his first press conference, hey, I don't know how it was done here in the past, but Russell Wilson's not going to have personal trainers in the building. I mean, that's how Sean Payton ran things. And so I think the league in general is trying to get back to that mentality instead of hiring these young guns. I mean, Ben Johnson probably factors into that, but you look at guys like Dan Campbell, leaders of men is what the league has to focus on, because there's a lot of really good play callers out there, but that doesn't mean you can lead a group of men. And I think it takes a special talent to do that. And last point is, you know, Sean Payton, it wasn't like he was tearing up the NFL in offenses. I was with him in Dallas. We were okay on offense, but it wasn't revolutionary. But Sean was a leader, and I think that came out through his head coaching interviews, and I think that's the word the league is to right now.
You know, Scott, when I look at some rankings, because there's six offseason head coaching vacancies between the Bears, the Raiders, the Jets, the Patriots, the Saints, and the Jaguars. A lot of the time you'll see the Saints kind of near the bottom, but I think one thing that people aren't really kind of taking into consideration, I'd like to get your thoughts on this as well, is, you know, organizational stability, I think, means a lot to some potential candidates, that, you know, you're not going to be a one and done if you get hired to be the next head coach of the Saints, like maybe you saw in Vegas. And Vegas has been a turnstile for head coaches recently, or what happened recently with Gerard Mayo with the Patriots. And it's happened almost every single year now where you've got these coaches that get their opportunity and then they're just gone after a single season. I think patience and stability is one of the main kind of calling cards that the Saints can offer any head coaching candidate.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And I, you know, that kind of ties into what I was saying earlier about just wiping the slate clean. When, you know, a lot of fans want, you know, want Mickey gone, or they want, they just want everybody underneath Mrs. Benson to be replaced. And right. it all sounds good. And what that does is it gives you hope for a little bit that it's going to work. And it might work out. You never know. But to your point, when there's stability in an organization, head coaches, they know everybody's going to get fired at some point in the NFL, but they want to know that it's not going to be a one and done. They want to know that someone's going to put faith in them, allow them to turn it around, allow them to prove it. And just like getting hired as a head coach, I want to know that my GM has stability. I want to know that he's going to be there and not fired after a year because we have a losing season in my first season. So it all ties hand in hand. The owner has to have a great relationship with the GM. The GM has to have a great relationship with the coaches. And it just all trickles down to the players as well. And that's where I made that point many times, you know, covering the Saints and just saying, we're lucky. I know it wasn't a great season. It was a tough season to cover. Too many injuries, but we're lucky because we cheer for, and I was a part of, and a lot of people are part of, a functional organization, an organization that just isn't dysfunctional. And I look at the Raiders, they're just firing people after 1 year. Those types of things are dysfunctional.
Yeah, real quick. I mean, I just want to kind of low light, I guess you would say, what's happened in Tennessee. I mean, that's just a perfect example. In 2022, you know, Mike Vrabel stays on. They fire John Robinson, the GM. All that goes back to what happened with A.J. Brown and not wanting to pay him. In 2023, they bring in Rand Carthon, the GM, with Mike Vrabel, but then they side with Rand Carthon and fire Mike Vrabel in 2024. But then after 1 year, or after, I guess, 2 years, 1 year after Mike Vrabel was fired, they move on from Rand Carthon. It's just... it's some of these organizations, and I just want to highlight this because it feels like it's a little bit underappreciated. Some of these organizations, they're just turnstiles for both coaching and GM, and dysfunctional is a great word for it, Scott. And I just think that the Saints don't get enough credit for, you know, how stable they really are.
There's no question. When a young guy or a free agent comes into the building, it was always a badge of honor to have them say, wow, it's different here. Wow, this is awesome. There's so much support. This feels like a family. Like that feels good. And that it hasn't been quite the same way the last couple of years. But I think winning always cures all. But, you know, you can never underestimate just like I said, when someone says you're a functional organization, or that's a good organization to go play for, that means a lot of different things. That means, you know, the ownership is good. The general manager is good. And to your point, when you look at Tennessee, I mean, that was an organization a few years ago. They had Derrick Henry in the backfield. They had AJ Brown. They had all these pieces. And the one thing that will never change about the NFL is you need great players to win games. And so you just start shipping away a bunch of great players. And we've had that discussion with the Saints roster. You know, everybody just says this guy's too old or that guy's too old. They need to be traded. Well, you start getting rid of all these players. Yeah, the cap looks a little better, but the performance on the field. And I think the biggest thing with this Saints team is just they have to look at something as far as the injuries. The injuries the last couple of years have just been absurd.
Yeah, talking about those injuries, the great start to this year was derailed by a bunch of those, and it's a team that will never know their full potential, what could have happened. But going into next year now, so they do have a lot of aging veterans at key positions on the roster, but what are some of the needs that you feel this team has to address going into next year? I know it seems like there's a whole lot of them, but I'm just curious, like your major positions you think need to be addressed going into 2025.
Yeah, you're right. You know, as the season went along, I think the need list probably grew. You're like, wow, we need this, we need this. And it did. You kind of realize some of the areas you need more depth on, or you need playmakers at. And listen, this offense, you know, you're playing with your backup quarterback, your backup running back. You don't have either starting receiver for half the season. It's tough to win games. So if you're looking at it from that perspective, a lot of people would say offensive line, hope you get McCoy back. But I think there's a lot of teams in the league that would love to have two tackles at their age. Penning ended up being the biggest concern going into the season, and he played pretty well. Fuaga, they hit a home run on. So I think when you look at it in the draft, I think this team needs a defensive run stopper in the middle, a D tackle for sure. You can never have too many DBs, but some playmakers on offense. I don't really know if there's enough guys who are making plays in space. You know, Kendra Miller has not been on the field enough for me to have a whole lot of confidence that he's going to be there week in and week out. So if you can strike gold with a great running back early in the draft to pair with Kamara, you know, because you look at this NFC South, the Falcons have a good 1-2 punch. The Buccaneers have a good 1-2 punch. The Panthers do as well. So I think it's about fixing, getting more depth at the running back position, getting more playmakers on the offensive side of the ball.
it's a great draft to do it, Scott, because Mike and I are going to really do a deep dive into this draft stuff. But just early looking at it, the running back position is a strength of the 2025 draft. And it's really unfortunate because the Saints do have the number 9 overall pick, and they got it because Chicago won that final game against Green Bay. They leapfrogged them to number 10. But they went 5-10, and they're picking at 9. And so, you know, I went back and looked at it last year, Scott. I think 5-12 was what the Chargers were when they picked 5 and got Joe Walt, their franchise tackle. Yeah. So, but this year, 5-12, because the bottom of the league was so bad, you're only picking at number 9. Now, granted, this is still, you can still get a blue chip piece at pick number 9, but it's just like, oh man, it's really unfortunate because of what the league was this year versus last year, where, you know, a team that went 7-10, like the Falcons, was picking 8, 7-10 this year would have gotten you at least like 13.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I mean, that's something I didn't realize. It's an outstanding point. I mean, usually when you only win 5 games, you'd like to think you have an opportunity to draft a future franchise quarterback. And I think that's kind of what's frustrating about this season is first of all, the draft is not that great for franchise quarterbacks. And, you know, do you sit there at 9 and 10 and 11 in that part of the draft where teams usually reach and end up, you know, getting bust at the quarterback's position? So I think the way the draft is going to unfold this year, the top 3 teams, those teams are all going to go after their quarterbacks. I don't know if the Saints, unfortunately, in a 5-1 season, you don't really reach for a quarterback in the first round. You're going to have Derek for another year. I think Spencer got a lot of great reps that a lot of fifth round picks don't get. There were flashes that he showed during that time. And the other thing you got to evaluate with Spencer is, heck, he's playing without his 2 starting wide receivers, his starting running back. So, but he got a lot of in-game experience, which is worth a lot. So, probably not going quarterback like a lot of people would think with a 5-win season, but there'll be other years where I think the quarterback drafts will be better and you can get a franchise quarterback.
Scott, you obviously mentioned hitting on these draft picks is so key, but also retaining them. We've seen guys like a Trey Hendrickson having so much success in Cincinnati, and man, oh man, this year, curious your opinion on a guy like Zach Bond, the linebacker, just couldn't get on the field, didn't have as much success in New Orleans, and has just thrived with the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, I don't know. I was saying this the other day to somebody. There's something about the Eagles and free agents going there and playing better. There's been a whole lot of teams where you sign free agents and they go and they played. Malcolm Jenkins, really, you know, his first 4 years with the Saints, he was a good player, but when he went to the Eagles and he became a Pro Bowler and really one of the best safeties in the league, and then obviously came back. But no, I think when you look at it, that is the frustrating part, because we can all point to, and I point to, the last 5 or 6 drafts, you haven't drafted 1 Pro Bowler, and that hurts. Over time, you know, it shows on the field. But then you look around the league, you see Alex Anzalone, the main piece of the Detroit Lions defense. You look at Hendrickson, like you said, leader, sack leader in the NFL, and you go around, and all these players are playing really well. Zach Bond, I mean, he was a player that they probably pegged to be something in New Orleans, never gave him an opportunity to be an off-the-ball middle linebacker. He goes to the Eagles, and Vic Fangio, to his credit, said, I see something in him. Let's give him the opportunity to do it, and becomes an all-pro linebacker. So, you know, sometimes coaches kind of peg you for something, and they don't really give you an opportunity to show what you can do. So credit to Zach and taking advantage of those opportunities. And the last thing with that is, you know, you have to really look at it from an organizational standpoint. Are we getting emotional and keeping guys too long and letting the other players go that we should be resigning? And I think those are things you can point to with guys like Anzalone and Trey and Zach.
Great Scott, points. Before we let you run, I want to circle back around to what you're talking about, depth and the injuries that really kind of derailed this season. It feels like the good news for this upcoming draft is that the Saints didn't really make any trades that hurt their draft positioning for this upcoming season. In fact, trading Marshawn Lattimore, you had an extra 3rd and 4th round pick. I feel like these picks, especially day 2, are so, so important for this team to hit on because, you know, you got to build up that depth. I know day 3 is typically the depth picks, but you got to be able to hit, obviously, on pick number 9, but having an extra 3rd-round pick, an extra 4th-round pick, these are guys that could potentially be key contributors if you hit on them in the draft. So having all these picks and kind of being able to load up for at least, what is it now, 6 top, basically 130, 140 picks, I think will be huge for this team in the 2025 draft.
No, there's no question. And, you know, and I've said this, if you're sitting there drafting at 9 and you really don't feel like there's nobody you're really in love with, and you can trade back into the teens and grab some more picks in the second, third round. I think this team is at that point where they have to do it. And fans don't like it, but that's how you build your teams. It's through the draft. And you go back to the Saints in 2006 draft, what that draft meant to our run with Sean there and, you know, Jari Evans and Streif and all those guys, Colston. And then again in 2017, it gave you that run from 2017 to 2020 with that team. So you have to draft well. You can never have too many draft picks. And it, I always kind of laugh because after the first day, everybody kind of like, oh, who we drafting? But that's where your franchise is put together, is in the second, third, fourth, fifth rounds. And you look at teams like the 49ers. They drafted Trey Lance. They went all in, a pretty functional organization. They realized they were wrong, but you know, fortunately for them, they drafted Brock Purdy the same year. So there's a lot of players that, even though they're being drafted in the hundreds and the 200s, you're just lucky enough that if you do your research and your homework and they can turn into pros, that's how you turn your franchises around.
Always appreciate your time, Scott. You back in Dallas, Texas right now?
Yeah, it's a winter wonderland in Dallas right now.
I was going to say, we're complaining about 46 degrees here. I know you're dealing with snow.
Yeah, it's all right, though. I grew up in Nebraska, so snow, I live in the south for a reason because I don't want to do this all the time, but every once in a while, it's kind of nice to look out the window and see.
Always appreciate the time, Scott. Have a good one. Be talking to you soon.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
Who dat? Scott Shanley, Super Bowl champ, Saints pregame and postgame analyst, joining us there. You can follow him at Scott Shanley on Twitter. We're going to take a break. Be right back with more sports talk. So stay tuned here on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Steve Geller, Charlie Long, hanging out with you till 8 p.m. this evening. Want to let you know, folks, that in the interest of public safety, Monday's Vikings-Rams wild card game has been moved from SoFi Stadium in Inglewood, California, to State Farm Stadium, the home of the Arizona Cardinals. The NFL announced today the decision was made in consultation with public officials, the participating clubs, and the NFLPA. The game's going to be televised on ESPN, ABC, and ESPN Plus, scheduled still for a 7 p.m. Central kickoff. So with the incidents, you know, the wildfires going on in California, that game now moving to Arizona.
It makes sense, man. Have you seen like the videos and
footage? Oh, it's horrible. Between seeing the videos of that and then, like I said, we were just talking to Scott Shanley about the snowstorms in Dallas and just everything going on here with the terrorist attack. It's like, what's going on? This the start of 2025.
2025 is off to a crazy start. My buddy is, I think, going to the Mavericks game tonight as well, which I don't know how he's getting out there because you see the snowy roads. It's crazy out in Dallas right now. So between that, yeah, and then just the fires out in, you know, LA and California, just it's devastating out there. So it's awful stuff.
You got kudos from a Super Bowl champ, Scott Shanley, talking about, you know, organizational stability, something that the Saints have had with their ownership, general manager, and something that the Tennessee Titans you brought up have just been lacking. What a mess over there when you consider, you know, what they went through between the head coach and GM, and that now you don't know where that organization, that's kind of like the New York Jets, you don't know where that organization stands at all.
Yeah, so Mike, you know, refers to her as Miss Amy, the owner there, yeah. The Tennessee Titans. Just kind of rehashing what I said to Scott here, because I think it's actually a pretty crazy timeline. It's been, you know, people in Tennessee, I sent this to my friend earlier, because when Trent Baalke was kind of announced, like, they weren't necessarily firing him right off the bat. That may still change. They may still decide to move on from him. It's up to Shad Khan, the owner of the Jaguars. All the Jaguars fans were basically up in arms. And there's like a real fun picture. It's like a screenshot of a press conference, and all the live chat is just clown emojis. Like they're all fed up. They're fed up with Trent Baalke's reign as GM of the Jacksonville Jaguars. But what's happening in Tennessee, funny enough, another AFC South squad, has been crazy to think about. Because if you ask anyone right now who is the most coveted head coaching candidate on the market right this second, maybe you get some Ben Johnsons, but you're going to get a lot of Mike Vrabels. And that goes back to what Scott was talking about, the leader of men personality as head coach. That's exactly what Mike Vrabel is. And Bobby's compared him to Dan Campbell a lot, and I can see it, right? It's just the type of personality that he is. Mike Vrabel was in Tennessee for 6 years. He went 54-45 in that time with the Tennessee Titans. Winning record, made the playoffs three different times, three straight years, in fact, and then he missed the playoffs the last 2 years there. So what happened in Tennessee over the last 3 years has just been crazy to follow, like from an outsider's perspective. I can't imagine doing sports talk in Nashville right now, because I think people would be up in arms right now about what's happened. in 2022, as I mentioned, you know, what happened with Vrabel, he was still there. They move on from John Robinson. And Mike has talked to me about this before. John Robinson and Mike Vrabel kind of butted heads a little bit, but they move on from him. You have a legit awesome head coach in Vrabel at that point. And I think Vrabel also wanted some kind of control over player personnel and his roster and everything like that, that maybe, you know, the GM, he wanted maybe his pick of the GM, so to speak. But they go with Ryan Carthon, who goes in. They kind of force it together in 2023. Now, Vrabel had a really interesting quote when he was inducted into the Patriots Hall of Fame, where I'll paraphrase here. I read it the other day. He basically told Patriots fans, appreciate what you have here. It's not like this everywhere else. And that sent Miss Amy up a wall. And so they move on from Vrabel, and they keep Ryan Carthon there. And now, just a year removed from that, Mike Vrabel is the most—he's the hottest head coaching name, once again, maybe outside of Ben Johnson on the market. And then they fire Ryan Carthon this year.
Another GM in the mix now.
They spent all this money. Ryan Carthon got to pick Bryce Callahan for the next head coach, and now the Titans are picking number one overall.
Right.
It's just like you went from having a guy that made the playoffs three straight years, got you to the one seed in one of those seasons. You move on from him, and the new OC of the Bengals that you got to replace him— is picking number one after 1 year, and you fire your GM.
So now the new GM, is he's going to be forced to take on Callahan as the coach.
I mean, I don't see why you would keep Callahan in this scenario, but that's what they're doing. It's right. Like they're trying to do these forced marriages where it didn't work with John Robinson and Mike Vrabel, so they bring on Ryan Carthon to try and make it work with Mike Vrabel. It doesn't work there, so they fire Vrabel because of what he said, partially because of what he said when he got inducted into the Patriots Hall of Fame. And then now, after this horrendous season that they've endured, they move on from Carthon. It's just they're trying to mishmash all these different pieces together, and it's not working. And so, like, talking about stability, organizational stability, Tennessee has none of that at the moment. They're just throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Feel like we should have gotten into either, you know, the scouting or some kind of management for the NFL, because just the front offices and staffs around the league seem to be in disarray. We mentioned the Titans, the New York Jets, even the Raiders have just been abysmal at bringing in. I think they've had the most head coaching change over the last 10, 20 years.
I think I called him Bryce Callahan. My apologies, it's Brian Callahan. So, but shout out to all the Titans media reporters that really helped me put that timeline together, because they have been on top of it. And if you really want to talk about unstable franchises right now, I mean, you can mention some of those crazy owners like Woody Johnson and David Tepper, but the Titans are in a bad spot right now, Steve. And I think it's maybe being a little bit underreported.
That's one of the things, you know, people are concerned with, maybe the fact the Saints could lose Aaron Glenn to maybe a team like the New York Jets. But I would think Glenn would look at that stability and what you have, that foundation here in New Orleans with an owner like Mrs. Benson that is really hands off and letting you do your job and the staff do their job as a big bonus, instead of going to like a New York Jets where it's more meddling.
Yeah, it's kind of a give and take, though. The Jets have some really strong young pieces on their roster.
Right, and better cap space.
And they're not in the cap situation that the Saints are. So it's going to be, you know, Mike said this in the last hour, Aaron Glenn's going to have his choice if he wants to go, and he's got connections to both franchises, the Jets and the Saints.
Right.
If he wants to go up to New York and be their next head coach, I think that he's in the running because that's what we keep joking about, that the Jets have interviewed 15 different guys and who knows who's going to get that job. But I think they would seriously consider him. And obviously the Saints are seriously considering him. He's got an interview with them tomorrow morning. So, you know, we'll see what happens with Aaron Glenn. But talking about the hot names on the market, he's right up there with all of them.
Yeah, and you mentioned with Aaron Glenn, too, he has canceled his interview or said no to interviewing with the New England Patriots. Maybe kind of a slight of, hey, look what you did to Jerod Mayo. I don't want to end up like that.
A little bit of that, and I think Mike put it best, that Mike Vrabel's going to get that job.
Exactly. Everyone and pretty much knows it.
Vrabel's going back home to New England, where he won three Super Bowls with them as a player. And, you know, he's going to get to coach Drake May, one of the promising young talents at quarterback in the NFL. And they have a top pick where they can start rebuilding that roster, because it needs a lot of work.
If you want to sound off with me and Charlie, the number 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Taking a break and coming back with more sports talk right after this. Welcome back into Sports Talk. New Orleans is a caring community, folks. We have each other's backs. The victims of the Bourbon Street terror attack and their families need our help. The Greater New Orleans Foundation made it easy with the New Orleans New Year's Day Tragedy Fund. You can donate now by going to gnof.org, or you can go to the neworleanssaints.com and purchase the NOLA Love t-shirt, or you can go to pelicans.com and purchase the Pels version of the NOLA Love t-shirt. Proceeds benefit United's Way's United for New Orleans Relief Fund and WWL Cares. Next hour, we're going to get into a little baseball talk at 7:20. Mark Etheridge, D1Baseball.com's SEC writer, will help us break down the 2025 season coming up next month as LSU gets ready to start, and the rest of the conference as well. Keeping an eye on also the game between the Notre Dame Fighting Irish and Penn State has just kicked off, giving you updates there. And right now, end of the third, LSU women up 67-62 over Tennessee. Be back with more sports talk after this.